all of you just remain with your breathing. Take a few deep breathing and then settle down with the natural, normal breathing. See that your body is completely relaxed. All of you, you may sit as you feel comfortable, and if you wish, you can keep your eyes open. We will have our final discussion. Finally, we come to the end of this retreat. In a very normal language, we can say that the retreat is finished. But please remember, the retreat actually begins now. As soon as you leave this center, your retreat starts. Please remember this. We are not ending the retreat. We are only ending the training here. Now we are trained, well equipped. Now we are going to jump into this world and fight the battle out. Let us see, are we ready to fight the battle or not? I could already see. Chattering has already started. Of course, 7 days. Complete silence. It has to come out now. Lot of temptations already started. And of course, keep watching your mind also. It has also started changing. Started planning, oh, I have to take this, I have to go, I have to do this, everything starts now. So the retreat must start. Just observe. Now, when you go back home, whenever you come to a retreat like this, there must be some carry home message. Otherwise, no use. If you don't have anything to carry home, it's a waste of time here. I keep telling people in our place, and more or less it applies here also, if you have not enjoyed the meditation here, the breathing, the sensation, I'm sure you must have enjoyed the silence. Some people might say, no, Vivek, I didn't enjoy the silence at all. I wanted to talk. I wanted to express how I felt, this, that. I wanted to shout. All right. You didn't enjoy the silence, doesn't matter. If you not enjoyed the meditation, you didn't enjoy the silence, I'm sure you must have really enjoyed the food. Amazing food. I don't know if some of you enjoyed or not enjoyed. For me, it's out of question not to enjoy this food. I kept on saying, no craving, no craving. As soon as I sit in the dining room, all the craving starts. That's my special. I must take it now, because somebody will take it away. That bread, wow, it looks. And that curry, really Indian curry, I must have it. So you must have enjoyed the food. All right, some of you say, no, no silence, no not the retreat, not the meditation, not the food. What's left? Nothing is left. He says, you have not enjoyed this. You must have enjoyed the talks in the evening, some jokes were there here, some stories were there here. So there was something that you enjoyed. Good. The smile says it. So there's nothing that you didn't enjoy it here. Good. Something you're carrying home. If you don't carry anything home, smile you're carrying. That's the greatest message here. I kept on saying, keep smiling. Difficulties are there. Keep smiling. Now when you go back to your life, we have to keep examining how the reality comes and how you're going to meditate. Now somebody says something and your reaction, normal reaction is, he said this to me, I will never forget all my life. This is a normal. I can never forget what he said to me. What madness. For years and years you're boiling inside. He said this to me. How dare he say this to me? Keep on boiling. The person who said it, he said it and he forgot it. But you're boiling inside all the time, boiling. After all, who suffers? Not the person who said it. Supposing after like 1 year, you meet this person who said to you this particular thing that you made you hurt someone, and he comes to you smiling, and you're boiling. Damn, this person comes again, I don't want to see him. This is how we carry the misery, suffering in ourselves with ignorance, because we don't understand. Now, as a meditator, if you are reacting normally to, like, let's say you have 10 instances where you keep on reacting. If somebody says something, you get angry. Of course, now when you go back, this rush, mashing rush, cars coming here, this coming here, people doing this, doing that. Lots of things, input starts coming through the senses. Always there is contact. If you have 10 instances, even if you don't react one, in the 10, one you say, all right, let me observe. What happens? Smile. Then you have meditated well. Of the 10 instances, you smile at one instance, you have benefited. You have meditated very well. Good. But if 10 out of 10 you keep on reacting with anger, with jealousy, with hate, then you have not meditated well here. This is how you start examining yourselves. Life is full of ups and downs. This is the truth are there. Sometimes wonderful good times you have, sometimes bad times you have. All the time ups and downs. As a meditator, it is very easy to smile when everything is going very smoothly. You can smile, wonderful, my life is so beautiful, I love. This is what? One experience, when you fall in love, you go to the seventh heaven. You're not on the earth even. Seventh heaven. Very nice at the seventh heaven. But do you know, soon you're going to fall down. We forget that. So much of attachment to the seventh heaven, that don't forget the earth. We belong to this earth, not the seventh heaven. That is why when vicissitude comes, smile. Hey, look, now I'm happy. I enjoy, but I'm aware. No attachment to this. This is there, it is there for some time, you enjoy it, but you also are aware, this is going to change. So you smile.
Translation is not happening.
That's what I thought so.
Anyone is willing to translate? Thank
you. So this is how you start checking, constantly checking, coming back to yourself, smiling, without any attachment. Make sure any incident comes, whether you are attached or not. If you are not attached, you smile. If you are attached, if this changes, which is bound to change, you can't help it, it will change, then you will suffer. Accept the reality of the change that you have been practicing here, then you can always smile whether you are here or you are here. Makes no difference. That is called maintaining the balance of your mind, otherwise we keep on losing the balance. Now, after this meditation, usually people say, meditation is wonderful. I know it's very important. And I'm sure many of you feel like, wow, meditation is really wonderful. I really want to practice every day now. But do you know, everybody has one complaint. Vivek, meditation is very important. It is very important because it changed me inside. I could feel it. I really learned myself. But the biggest complaint of everybody is, Vivek, you know, I'm very busy, I have no time. This is the usual complaint of all meditators, usually, I have no time. I know it's very important. Let us analyze our life to see whether you have time or no time. Let's analyze. In the morning you wake up, during the retreat, somebody comes with the bell, 5:45, ding, not a pleasant bell. All other bells are so nice, except the morning bell. But of course, as the days passes, you start liking it, you start waking up, doesn't matter. But few days, reacting. I was having such a nice dream, this damn bell, where it comes from. This is the normal reaction. But now, let's see, what is our life? You keep on saying, no time for meditation, no time for meditation. Understand, you have so much of time, that it's only a matter of realizing that you have so much time. Let's analyze. In the morning, when you go back home, let's say you're sleeping and you wake up in the morning. The usual tendency of waking up is, suddenly you know, oh, this is morning now. So you start rolling here, you start rolling here, playing with your blanket, playing with your pillow, playing with this, and you start thinking, now I get up. Ah, relax, another 5 minutes, relax, another 5 minutes. Keep on rolling, keep on rolling. Half an hour goes, 1 hour goes, and you keep on excusing. I'm sure you're going to get up. Just the sun, let the sun come. Sun has not come, it's too early for me. This is the conditioning that takes place, and you never get up. Half an hour you waste early in the morning, and you keep on saying meditation. Oh no, no time for meditation. Alright, then what do you do? Let's say you wake up. As soon as you wake up, do you just run to office in your night dress? I don't think so. I mean, you just get up, and you know, when you wake up, how you look like, you know that your hairstyle, this style, whatever style it is. And of course, you know what dress you wear in the night. You can't run to office saying, now it's office time. You run like this. Oh no, we don't run like this. We start getting up and then you take the brush and you start brushing. And you know what we brush. We don't know whether we're brushing or not brushing. You take the brush and you start brushing and thinking this, thinking that. And the doctor says more than 10 minutes of brushing is injurious to health, not good for your gum. And you keep on doing like this. So much of time is wasted. And meditation, oh no, I have time, 10 minutes to brush. But meditation, no time. Because you have not understood, meditation means this is meditation. So you keep on thinking, I have no time to sit. That means no time for meditation. You keep on brushing, brushing, thinking about, now I have to go, I have to do this. Oh, my breakfast has to be ready. And then what dress should I wear? Constant thinking, and you're brushing, you never brush. Anyway, brushing is finished, let's say. Then what happens? Then you go to the, what we call, answer the call of nature. This is a very sweet language. Go to the toilet. Straight language. Toilet. What is the purpose of toilet? Is to answer the call of nature. What else? Not many of us. Not for us. For many of us, toilet means something else. Some people keep telling, I can't go to toilet without newspaper. So people go with newspaper, magazines, and then keep on reading, and you know what's so good is the newspaper. Full of hate, anger, jealousy, it's all filled with newspaper, and you're answering the call of nature, reading, oh, boom, blast today, this rape, that rape, this case, that case, 100 cases. How can you answer the call of nature with so much intention in the head? And then you keep on saying, I can't answer the call of nature. And then some people says, oh, not, no, for me, no newspaper. I need my cigarette to answer the call of nature. And then somebody goes, take the cigarette, sits down on the toilet, and then keep on smoking. Now the answer of call of nature is happening or not happening, I don't know, God knows. But cigarette is happening, for sure. Keep on cigarette after cigarette, cigarette after cigarette. How can you answer the call of nature? Cigarette. Because when you take the cigarette, so much of ego is there. Look, smoking, you feel like a bit superior, because this, whatever the cigarette contains makes you feel like that. And you keep on saying no time for meditation. Alright. Where madness? Madness is there in life All excuses are there, no time. Look, in Thailand there is a program, it's called Knock Knock. And this program they show on television. That they go to some of these houses and show how expensive this house is, how luxury this guy lives and this and this and this is. To me, when I see this, I always have to smile. I don't know how you look at it. But anyway, interesting. And whenever they showed any house, the biggest topic is the toilet. Toilet is a big issue. How big toilet he has got, what he has got in his toilet. And you know, people keep piles of newspaper in the toilet. People have cigarettes in the toilet. But for some people, there are even more madness than this one. Do you know what? They showed one house. There's this toilet here. Just in front of the toilet, he has got internet connection. Computer is there, internet connection is there, and you are answering the call of nature. Meditation? Oh no, I have no time for meditation. This is what is all life about. And alright, then by hook and crook you answer the call of nature, let's say. Then what? Then quickly you come back, take a shower, singing here, singing this, dancing here, dancing that, whatever you take, you do the shower. You are not at all taking shower, physically you are taking, so-called taking shower, let's say you finish your shower. Then you go quickly with some towels and then you look at your breakfast. And in this part of the world I see breakfast is very easy to prepare, not like in our place. You have to get up in the morning and start preparing chapati and then curry has to be there. Some breakfast has to be prepared, you need time. But I see in this part of the world you don't need really time for breakfast. Why? Because you have all these, like what you call this wave, that wave, microwave or whatever wave it is, this machine. And then you have all these ready-made things in the refrigerator, some bread, butter, whatever it is, or sandwich, whatever, and you put it, and then put it in microwave, 5-10 minutes, maybe exaggerating, but 1 or 2 minutes, your sandwich is ready. Then what happens? The machine is quick, the machine makes you also quick, and then you're running here with your sandwich, picking up this one and running to that side, picking up something else, and then you're arranging something, but in the mouth the sandwich is going on, and then sandwich finished, then you run for the coffee, do this. No time for meditation, no time for eating also, but eating you do it with this, running here, running there. Alright, then you finish your breakfast, then you dress up quickly, looking which dress to wear, which color matches what, which shoes, this shoes, that color, this earring matches this or not, this hairstyle, that hairstyle, all kinds of things, looking at the mirror from every angle, then you go to office. Alright, then you go to office. How do you go to office? Some of you have your car. I mean, most of you have your car. Not like in our country, like we don't have cars, so we always run for the buses. Many times we miss the buses. But anyway, you have cars, so you don't have to rush. Like anyway, but still, agitated mind is there, you start running in the car, and you start. And madness is there also. Some of you keep saying, when I drive car, I need my coffee. So you take your coffee, go to the car, put your coffee, start driving, drinking, and then put on the music also, FM or whatever FM it is, then you start dancing or whatever it is, inside you're moving, and you drive to office, suddenly there is a traffic jam. What happens? Traffic jam is there. Starts complaining. This government, why did I vote? Look, they have not improved the roads. What madness, somebody is disturbing, doesn't give little sense. Look at the traffic jam, office hours. Keep on complaining, and then you reach office. Office is office. Full of work, full of tension, full of pressure from boss, this boss, that boss, most unwanted people most of the time. That's how our day passes. And then you come back from office, frustrated or tired or anger or whatever it is. If you have a family, you throw all the anger on the family because you have been carrying it too long. You can't keep it to yourself for so long. Then you throw it to others. Very unpleasant. Now see what you can do. As a meditator, you have so much time. Only thing is realize. When you wake up, we kept on saying determination, faith. When you wake up, take some little thing to just wake up. And then 5-10 minutes as you wake up, Just sit down. You keep on rolling, but now as a meditator, you sit down. First thing you do is observe your breathing. Just feel your body. As you wake up, you feel so fresh, and then you can feel your breath so clearly in the morning. Just observe you breathing. That itself will change your whole day, whether you believe it or not. If you don't believe me, try. The first thing as a meditator, when you wake up, the first thing you do is observe you breathing, then you go on with it. Then when you wake up, when you have to brush, just brush. Just brush, and if you just brush for what the brush is made for, it's healthy for you, and you can turn that into meditation. Do that mindfully. Take 5 minutes, very carefully, you're brushing here, you know you are aware, I'm brushing here, upwards, downwards, you brush. All this brushing becomes meditation. And then, whatever, answering the call of nature. I tell you from my experience also, if you really go to your toilet and then relax your whole body, feel your body very closely, all the organ systems in the body starts functioning normally. And only when the organ systems are normal, then can you very easily answer the call of nature. Because if you don't relax and if you don't feel the body very closely during reading newspaper, you're tensing yourself. And the organ system also gets tensed. Then how can you answer the call of nature? The best thing is relax the whole body, be aware of it. That's how you answer the call of nature. So you turn that into meditation instead of filling your head with all this rubbish in the morning. And then, of course, take some time to eat your breakfast. Take some time out of it. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just time enough to finish your sandwich or whatever which it is. Take some time. I tell you, if you just take out time and eat very mindfully and tell yourself, all right, I couldn't sit today a very long time, but let me turn this into meditation. So you sit down, just keep on eating the sandwich very mindfully. Your mind becomes so calm. All activities that you do, you keep on doing mindfully. Let's say you started eating. Half of the time you started the usual way of thinking. But in that process, let's say 10 or 15 minutes you started eating, even for one moment you tell yourself, oh, let me just eat mindfully. Even one action you do with this mindfulness, I tell you, that is very powerful. It is very powerful to change your whole day. Remember, don't underestimate meditation. Meditation does not mean all the time sitting down, walking like a tortoise. You will never reach your office if you walk like a tortoise. That was only a training year. And now, when you drive, you're very mindful. All right, you're driving. If you're stuck in a traffic jam, congratulate yourself. Ah, wonderful. Now I have 1 hour or 3 hours meditation time. Don't complain. If you start complaining, nothing is going to change. You start saying, damn this political party, this government, that government. Do you think that the parties will just come and say, yes sir, I listened to you, now I created traffic for you? Nothing. Full of hate, full of anger will start coming up. Instead of that, you say, wonderful, now let me meditate. Turn that into meditation. Wonderful moments of meditation. Another thing, if you're taking public transport, let's say you take the bus. What do you do when you get on the bus? Usual thing is, you look at this person, look at that person. He's got shirt, wonderful shirt. Hey, he's mobile. His hairstyle. Look, he looks gorgeous. He looks handsome. All this judgmental mind starts coming up. All right, I mean, you do judgmental thing one time, two times, three times, but all your life, how can you spend your life just judging? What's the use? What do you get by saying, oh, gorgeous person? You don't get this person. No. This person, as his bus stand comes, he gets up and goes away. Now, the best thing is, just if in the bus, if you're standing, of course you stand. If you get a seat, I don't know in your country how the system works. In our country, you have to elbow yourself in the bus. And then you're squeezed in the bus or whatever it is, and you're standing like this. I don't think your country is so, stuck like that. But There must be some space in the bus, seats must be there. If you get a seat, very good, sit down, close your eyes and start meditating. I tell you from my experience in Thailand, and Bangkok is a city, crazy city, and imagine a person coming from the Himalayas, thrown into Bangkok city, completely lost, madness around. If I don't meditate, I will commit suicide very soon in Bangkok. And that's a fact. As soon as I get out of the house, I tell myself, you're going to the meditation center now. When you go out of your house, you're not going to office, you're not going out, you're going to the meditation center. Why? All the enemies are going to go jump on you. Ah, wonderful. So you start to meditate. As soon as I get into the bus, I start telling myself, of course, if I get a seat, fine. If I don't get a seat, I stand up. And then I first say, relax my whole body and say, all right, let me use this 20 minutes from the bus to the next train station. That's how my office used to be. So I used to relax my whole body, and then I say, all right, let me see what's going on in the body at this moment. What feeling, sensation? You'll be so surprised. Because your mind is so much in the future, what office, this, you will find very unpleasant or very strange reaction in the body. You start observing, the body starts amazingly calming down. And then you look at the breath, your breath is so fast, because you're running or you're thinking so fast, so the heartbeat is... As you start to meditate, everything becomes so normal. And of course, you never know when you reach your next station. But of course, when you reach the next station, you're already half calm. You're already calmed down. You're aware what's going on. Hey, you're aware of everything going around you. Then you jump on the train station. Normally, in Bangkok, every 3 minutes there's a train. So I don't have to rush. I see people rushing and running with their backs half falling and some people falling. They rush to this train. Somebody just runs and the door closes, bang, you know, the in between the doors. All this, it's a dramatic life drama. I see this. I tell myself, no, I'm not going to rush. I wait in queue. And then I'm in the first row when everybody is gone. Then I get a seat. I sit down again, start to meditate. Wonderful opportunity. Of course, for the first few days, I was also looking. Ah, these Thai girls, these boys, everything. Wonderful. This. After a time, the same things, the same... What else? So I started to used to meditate like this. Wonderful time. Of course, sometimes it goes into extreme. I'm meditating. Suddenly, I realize that I'm in the next station. I pass my station. Doesn't matter. Wonderful. Come back again. You don't lose anything. If the boss in office starts shouting you, why you're late today? You smile. Not for any reason, but for meditation reason. Good. You miss the station because you're meditating. What's wrong in that? This is how you can translate the whole action into meditation. Now, when in the evening, when I come back from office, of course, when I go to the office, I'm always with a big smile. Hey, how are you? The normal reaction, some of my friends, today I'm very down. This is the reaction. Yesterday, you know, I had a very bad night or somebody said something to me. Usually I get this reaction. No, I've not finished that job, you know, I don't know when I'll go, hey, relax, you need any help? No worries, I'm here, don't worry. Just saying, whether I'll help or not, that's a different story. Just say it. Whether I'm capable or not, that's a different story. But the intention should be there, the intention to help. Don't worry, we'll do it together. And if I'm not a meditator, if I'm not been meditating all the way, do you think I'll say that? Oh, don't ask me, I'm myself in a miserable state, I'm frustrated, don't ask me. This is the normal, oh, give me my time, my space, I myself need my space. You don't want to even go near. As a meditator, you start to smile. Even when you're like so gloomy, doesn't matter. You keep on telling yourself, smile. I'm here to smile. Then the whole life starts to change. Now coming back from office, the same instance, Thailand is very known for the world's worst traffic jam is in Bangkok. It is known like that. And sometimes when I take the bus, 3 hours on the road. 3 hours. And to me, as soon as traffic jam happens, I start smiling and say, oh, okay, I can now meditate. Nobody at home can complain that you are not in time, or late, or traffic jam is traffic jam. You can't do anything about it. All right, so you meditate. All right, for our family at home, not that a worry or tension is there, give a call. Nowadays, you have mobiles, you have SMS, what do you need? You just say, I'm stuck in a traffic jam. Everybody understands. All right, I start to meditate. And I observe how people get so tensed after some time. Few minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, the traffic is moving very slowly. Let's say our bus doesn't move with the car in front. I have seen how people sitting at the back tells the drivers, go! This place, go, why don't you move? This is logic. And I could see how much of anger people are, frustrated because of the traffic jam, and it's very hot. You know, of course, if it is an air-conditioned bus, it is okay, but many a times the bus I use is normally very normal bus, no air conditioning, very hot Thailand. And to me, it's always a big challenge to see, it's very frustrating, and then you keep checking. This is how it starts. So you can make this use of this wonderful opportunity to meditate. Why complain? By complaining, things does not change. It is only through smiling, accepting the reality as of now, and then translating that into meditation, then only life becomes so wonderful. Now if you start integrating meditation like this in your life, then probably you meditated well or you benefited from meditation. Otherwise, if you are stuck in a traffic jam, if you don't remember to smile, no, then meditation does not work. If you want to see meditation work, keep reminding yourself, hey, look at the madness, what's going on. Hey, look, keep smiling. I keep telling my friends, even in the most difficult situation, where people are so frustrated, so angry, no matter how difficult life seems to be, yet you tell yourself, oh no, smile. I tell you, it is so much of the problem. So much of the problem. Just tell yourself, no matter how. I'm sure many a times, many of us feel, if I might ask some of you, have you ever in your life felt, I'm the worst person on the earth. I'm the most useless person. I'm sure many of us feel this. And I'm sure many of us also feel, there is no use living. I think I better die. No hope for me. Useless, this life. I'm sure many of us feel this also. And it's very common to feel this. Frustration, reaction is there. Even at that point, smile. I tell you, it helps so much. Because this smile will bring back you to meditation, to your self-reflection. Otherwise, keep on blaming, keep on being angry, this, that. All kinds of things start coming up in the mind. This is how you can start coming back. And I keep telling people like this. And then somebody comes up to me and says, Vivek, I don't know whether I'll remember to meditate or not meditate when I'm very angry, very frustrated. But one thing is sure. If I'm frustrated, I will remember Vivek jumping on this bed with water and smiling and happy. Whatever you take to smile, your intention should always be to come back to yourself to smile. And always try to develop this mind of love and compassion for others. If somebody is very tensed, oh, your heart should just go to him. Wish him, may he come out. Look, he's got so much of a problem. He doesn't have this understand. May he come out. This wish and compassion should constantly be there in you all the time. And remember these wonderful qualities that I told you. Keep developing one by one, or whatever, even one quality, doesn't matter, keep developing. The 5 precepts is part of your Shila if you want to take it for your life. Morality. And it's only about a matter of 5 things. Not to harm or hurt any living beings. Not to take anything that does not belong to you. Not to engage in any unlawful sexual intercourse. Or not to speak which is not the truth. And not to depend on any external things, like intoxicating things like drugs, drinking and all this. People keep telling me, Vivek, what's wrong? 1 glass of beer is apple juice. You don't drink apple juice. This is wheat juice. People compromise like this. But I tell you, for me in my life, I've never ever compromised, because every addiction starts one glass. It starts with one glass. And that's how the addiction starts developing. In Switzerland, in the lunch break, in the lunch time or dinner time, I don't remember, they serve one glass of wine. And I don't know the difference of wine, these all kinds of different drinks are there. I don't know what difference are there, what makes this, what is made of this. I don't know. Anyway, they said, this is wine. Said, Vivek, this is our tradition. During our meal, we have one glass of wine together and say cheers and whatever this. I said, well, I respect your culture, I respect your tradition, but look, for me, I have taken a very strong vow in my life. I have certain principles in my life for which I can never, ever compromise. You give me a glass of water, I will say cheers. And I did it. They never felt offended. They didn't feel bad that I didn't take it. No. They felt more respectful. All right, Vivek, be respectful. It's all right. It's not compulsion. It's not compulsion. This is how it is. Otherwise, the danger, the temptations that this addiction creates is very dangerous. Keep watching. Give you one story. One monk was meditating, like, you know, in a tradition, in some tradition we have monks meditating for 3 months, 2 years, like this. So there was this monk who was meditating for 3 years. And now, suddenly he was about to come out with all these meditation experiences, like we are now after 7 days of operation. Now everybody seems to have a big smile. Whether the smile is out of that experience or whether to go home, that's a different thing. But anyway, this monk was ready to come out, and then one lady comes to him. I'm not telling this story to offend the ladies. Story is story. Just take it like that. One lady goes to this monk. And she says to the monk, hey monk, if you don't do any one of these three things, I'm going to die. Monk was very puzzled. What is this? What a wonderful meditation. I have to face this reality now. What's the reality? This lady comes to him. She brings herself. She says, you have to sleep with me. And if you don't sleep with me, I've brought a goat with me. You kill this goat. If you don't kill the goat, then at least you must drink this bottle of wine or whiskey or whatever it is, alcohol. One of the three things you don't do, I'm going to die. The monk was totally confused. And you know, monks, compassion. The monks have to develop compassion. Now the monk starts to use his intelligence. Like any one of us will also do intelligence. Sleeping with a woman? My goodness. If a monk sleeps with a woman, then finish. Monk life is gone. You lose your monk's life. Then whether you wear the rope or not, you're no more a monk. If you engage in any sexual, for a monk it is complete celibacy. Of course, for us it is unlawful sexual. For monks it is just impossible to have sex. So he starts thinking, suppose if I have sex, my goodness, I harm myself, I destroy my monk's life. Not only that, I harm this lady. Kill the goat. The first precept says not to harm or hurt any living beings. And if a monk kills something, again I lose my monk's life. How can I do this? Just impossible. Alcohol. How can a monk drink alcohol? Well, you're meditating to become more conscious, to be more conscious. And you drink this wine, you become more unconscious. How can I do this? It is just impossible. And he's trying to explain to this lady. She says, no, I'm going to die if you don't do one of these three things. So the monk starts to judge and value. He says, all right. Looks, this woman is crazy. I have to get rid of her somehow. How to get rid of her? I can't kill because two involvement are there, harming two people. I can't drink. I can't have sexual relation to whom people harm. But of course, if I drink this alcohol, bottle of alcohol, I harm myself. At least I don't harm this woman. So all right, I will take this bottle of alcohol. And he takes this bottle of alcohol. And then you know what the story. He drinks this bottle of alcohol, sleeps with this woman, and then kills the goat and eats it. This is the danger. One bottle, it starts with every one bottle. There was a time some of you might be wondering that some people have this experience, why do I have this experience, why not everybody? There was a time in my life also where I was so frustrated, I was thinking to commit suicide. There was a time. Now when I look back, I smile. Anyway, there was this time, so frustrated, so depressed, I thought there is nothing left in the world, I just have to die. But because I've been always a teacher for others, my friends always consider me as a teacher since school days, now I'm a teacher for others, how can I tell my friends who are supposed to be my students, hey, I'm so frustrated, how can I tell them? Because I keep advising them, hey, if you get frustrated, you do this, you do this, you do this, it's very easy to speak. But when reality strikes you, my goodness, it's not easy. And I didn't know what to do. I thought I was so liberated. I thought I've come out of all these difficulties. And suddenly when I had this experience, I thought I'm going to die. I thought I'm going to commit suicide. And I never told anybody. I never told that I'm frustrated, I'm going to die, I feel like dying, committing suicide. I never told anybody. And then some of my friends came to know that there is some change in Vivek. Because usually he's all the time making jokes. Now what's happened to his jokes? Jokes have gone away. Started asking, what happened to you? Then I said, no, you know, I'm feeling not good. And that some of my friends, they started saying, hey Vivek, why you take life so seriously? You know, come, let's go to the bar, you know, let's drink and let's talk and go to this movie, do this. And I thought very deeply. They started telling me stories of how I took drugs, when this happened to me. How I took this, and I came out of it. That's what they told me. And I started thinking whether this is really true. Started thinking. And then I realized. I said to myself, even if this frustration or if this depression remains for the whole life, I don't care. But yet I will never ever resort to drugs or drinking. I told myself very firmly that I will prefer to die rather than take these things and be dependent on these things, because I knew if I start depending on these things, it will be more miserable. So I sat in meditation. And I tell you, when I sat in this situation for meditation, it was like, I can't express it, it was so difficult, it was like, yeah, I mean, you can't even sit for a moment. But I told myself, do or die. And I used to sit for 1 hour with all these difficulties, and mind you, with all this frustration, the head is going to burst now. After some time, if I sit for a few minutes, I feel like I'll go mad. What am I doing? Madness, I'll go crazy. Yet I told myself, one moment break. Just one moment you don't break. That will break the intensity of it. Be patient. Like advice, in about 6 months, completely came out of it. In about 6 months, I was so patient for 6 months. And because I said, let it remain for my life, and yet I will be very patient enough, then only I think it worked. Otherwise, things seem to never work, and you keep on depending. Very easily, something happens, hey, drink this, or take this drug. Very easy, you get habituated to that, and you never come out of it. No matter how intense the life experience may be, it is like a speeding car. Let's say you're driving. I'm so surprised people drive here like 100 or 80 or something like this. Don't try that in Ladakh especially. If you try that, you go up and down like this. Maximum 60, 70, that's the maximum. If you go across 80, already the car goes like this because our roads are blessed. Now let's say you're speeding on a highway so fast, and now you'll have to stop the car. Of course you have to stop the car somewhere. And when you have to stop the car, do you just go, all right, stop, and you press the whole brake? No. When you know now the stop is coming, or you want to break the speed, you put one brake. First one slow brake, motion is broken. Another slow brake. Another motion is broken. Another slow brake. Slowly and slowly, it comes to a halt. The car comes to the still. This is how you have to keep on telling and reminding yourself, hey look, I'm like a speeding car now. Full of anger is there, frustration, lust, or whatever it is there. Now let me just give a break. One moment break you give, it is much more powerful than 1 hour of frustrations. Even one moment is very powerful. Keep giving yourself this momentary breaks in life. Momentary breaks in life, I tell you, your whole life is bound to change. Keep practicing. This is how you can translate your life into a meditative life. And of course, people keep telling me, I've decided now I'll have retreats, at least one retreat every year I will go to this retreat, that retreat, this retreat. And let's say you come to this retreat, now you go back home, you forget all about the retreat. But don't forget, what have you benefited during the 7 days? You've been developing so many wonderful qualities. And remember, there are 10 wonderful qualities, we call them perfections. In the language of the Buddha, they're called paramis. Now, Buddha, who is called Sammasambuddha, is the fully enlightened one, they develop these qualities 3 times over. That means they take lives to perfect this, perfect this, perfect this, perfect this. And for us, even if you perfect this 1 time, we are enlightened. And every time you come here for a meditation, remember always, you are developing this wonderful 10 qualities. What are these 10 qualities? The first one is called Nekkhamma Parami. Nekkhamma means renunciation. Renunciation. For the 7 days, you renounced your wonderful flat, you renounced your wonderful bed, your wonderful music, your wonderful everything you renounce, come here, and then you come to this place, you accept the reality, for these 7 days I'm like a monk or nun. Whatever comes, I accept. There's very simple room, alright. Sharing room, alright. Food is there, whatever is there. You just depend and be grateful to whatever is there. Then you have renounced all this attachment, all these things, you've renounced, and for 7 days you were perfecting this parami of renunciation. And not only that, you renounced all the sensual desires to go deep into your mind, so you were practicing this wonderful quality of renunciation. And so wherever you go to these retreats, make sure that you put one drop of this renunciation. Now you've renounced, you've practiced this wonderful quality. You might be thinking, what do I get from this meditation? Nothing. Remember, this wonderful quality was developing. Now you will start going back and you start realizing, look, there are so many things that I really, really don't need. It's just a craving, 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 just that you think I need it, but actually in practicality, we don't need it. So you will start understanding by living a very simple life. You are living here very simple, you live very simple, and what we call in English, there is a phrase, simple living, high thinking, that's what you were doing. And this is what you were practicing these 7 days. Remember, Nekkhamma Parami. Then the second one is called Shila Parami. Of course, when you come to a retreat like this, morality, Shila, you are trying to practice all these 5 wonderful qualities, not to harm or hurt any living beings, not to speak anything which is not the truth. You are silent, so where is the chance? So you are practicing this morality for the 7 days. And when you are in a setup like this, in a retreat like this, it is a great opportunity to practice this morality. Because it's very difficult when you go home, everything starts and you can't remember, what was that? 5 precepts, what is this? 5 precepts. It's difficult. But in a retreat like this, you start purifying. Remember, you have purified a chunk of your morality, so you have achieved something during these 7 days. Remember, Shila Parami. Then the third one is called Virya Parami. Virya means effort. I talked about very elaborately about 4 kinds of effort. You were trying to develop this effort as much as you could. Even 1 moment effort was there. Wonderful quality was developing. Wonderful effort. And you're perfecting these perfections of parami, of virya. And then panya parami. Panya means wisdom. You were trying to develop this understanding of what is good, what is not good, what is reacting, what is not reacting, trying to understand the reality of the change. Changing constantly. Suffering is there. Look at this illusion. Look at this. This understanding was developing, so you were developing this wonderful quality of wisdom, quality of panya parami. So you are nearing to this liberation, to purification of the mind, so you are practicing. Another one, kanti parami. Kanti means patience. You were developing this wonderful quality of patience. If you had no patience, I'm sure half of you must not be here or run away. No patience. You were very patient, And all, I get very good feedback from people, look at them, how patient they are, not disturbing the others, trying to be on your own, walking very slowly, slowing down all the actions, keeping all this patience, make sure that you are not disturbing others, not disturbing the other person. You practice this, you were developing this wonderful quality of patience. Of course, you take this wonderful quality, you have made a deep impression on your mind, of course, it will give its own results in your daily life, don't worry. But in a retreat, you were developing it in a great sum. So be happy that you are developing this wonderful quality of patience. And the next one is for Satya Parami, that means truth. You were just being with the law of nature, which is the truth. Truth, truth, but nothing else, just the truth. As it is, breathing is there as it is, sensations, feelings are there as it is, not that you were trying to create. So being with the reality, you were developing this wonderful quality of Satya Parami, truth, truth, truth. And the other one quality is called Adhisthana Parami. Adhisthana means strong determination. Even before you came here, Sukkot holiday, I was told it's a wonderful holiday, it's a long holiday. I mean, you could have done many things during this holiday. You could have gone for a holiday to India or Europe or, I mean, you could have done a lot of things. Came for a meditation, made a strong determination, I will stay for 7 days. Made a strong determination, I will not give up. You kept on practicing, kept on practicing. You were developing this wonderful quality of determination. Look, this wonderful quality you were developing for the 7 days. So, be happy that you are developing this Adhisthana. Yesterday we had this whole day when we had the group sitting. I told you, now we don't move. You are making a strong determination not to move. Do or die. Wonderful quality. Now this will also help you in life because you have developed this wonderful quality. Then there is this Metta Parami. Of course, at the end of our meditation, at the end of talk, we did a very brief metta meditation, giving your love, sharing your love and compassion with others, visualizing each person and wishing them happiness, wishing them come out of their difficulties. What are you doing? Developing metta, love, compassion for others. Of course, today before we end, we are going to end with a little bit longer metta meditation where you learn how to meditate. You were developing this wonderful quality. Then the other one quality is called Upekkha Parami. Upekkha means equanimity, the balance of your mind. You were trying constantly to maintain the balance of your mind. There were difficulties at times. Sometimes there were limitations in some facilities maybe, and yet you maintained the balance of your mind. Of course, at times you reacted, doesn't matter, and yet you came back to yourself. And sometimes reactions can be seen, physically, verbally or mentally. You could see it. You can't hide these things. It is very apparent on the face. And yet you were going back and saying, oh, relax, balance of your mind, equanimity. You are developing this wonderful quality. Remember this? And the last one is called Dana Parami. Dana means sharing, giving. Of course, you had this wonderful sermon yesterday where you share whatever little thing you have. We are not monks and nuns to just say, all right, I'm a monk and nun, so I depend on others. We are normal people, we have to work, we have to make our own living, so we don't depend on others. But since you've come here, living as a monk and nun, you got this wonderful opportunity, now you give back in whatever little way you could, financially or whatever service way, you were developing this great quality of sharing. Dana, sharing, sharing. And as I told you, when you share this love and compassion, then you were practicing sabda dhanam, dhamma dhanam jinati. That means, of all gifts, the greatest gift of dhamma is the greatest. Remember, these are the 10 wonderful qualities that you were developing during the 7 days. And you have to keep on developing, keep on developing. We practice this metta meditation. You practice dhana parami, of course, giving, sharing. But remember, during our evening practice, I kept on saying, look, visualize your teachers. I don't know how many of you could see me smiling or see Rafiqat smiling, or you saw us very frowning with like this, strict teachers. But anyway, you have to constantly keep practicing this every day in your life. Little by little, you start practicing. In Indian tradition, we have a tradition that whenever a teacher teaches something, those days, in ancient times, we give Guru Dakshina. Guru Dakshina means a fee for the teachers, but it is not fixed fees. Guru Dakshina, we call it. So Gurukula system means the education system was not like today. You go to this monastery, become a monk and spend about 10-15 years just learning the scriptures. Not only that, you learn about science, you learn about how to live in society, all these things are given training, and at the end of the training you give some Guru Dakshina to your teacher, whatever you feel you give. This is called Guru Dakshina. Whatever you have made, dana or no dana, that is immaterial, that doesn't matter at all. If you made no dana, it doesn't matter. But in your daily life, now when you go back, if you don't start visualizing your teacher smiling and wishing them, I'm very sorry, your meditation does not work. You have to practice and share this metta constantly, every day, every time, whenever you meditate. Gratefulness for whatever you receive. There might be some things that seems not logical, too much intellectual, or this is too abstract for me, not my cup of coffee. If you think like this, doesn't matter. Just keep them aside. Just take whatever you feel, this is wonderful. I take this with me. Take whatever you feel has to be taken. Not that because some things were not so appealing, you throw away everything, then you are at loss. So take whatever you can and be very grateful for what you received. And that is why I told you before we started the retreat, be grateful to this wonderful great teacher who discovered this wonderful meditation, the Buddha. Buddha never started any religion. Buddha was not interested in converting people into his religion. He kept on saying, don't come to me, don't change your guru, don't change your religion. He kept on constantly telling people. And that is why when I started retreat also, we don't start chanting Buddhang, Sharanam, Gacchami, this is the Buddhist mantra. We don't do that. Because if I start chanting, some of you might start thinking, this person has come here to make us Buddhist. Not this meditation does make us Buddhist. Not to have this mind itself. I don't want people to even have a trace of thought in the mind that you're being made Buddhist. And it is not a question of being Buddhist. Now within the 7 days you've understood whether you are being made Buddhist or you are taught something which is universal. And working with the mind is universal. What has this mind got to do? What this anger has got to do with any religion? Anger is anger. Whether you're Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, doesn't make any difference. Anger is anger. When you get angry, you throw the glass, whether you're Buddhist or Muslim or whatever it is, you do the same action. So this is universal. That is why it's called Dhamma. Dhamma means the universal law. So this is what you are practicing, and take whatever you can and try to integrate them in your daily life and see that your life changes. Little by little, little by little, you always have to keep on reflecting, keep on going back to yourself, keep on analyzing, always seeing, all the time. You, all our life, most of the time, we keep on laughing at others. Look at him, look at her. She's very frustrated person. She's very angry. I don't know, she's very short-tempered or he's very short-tempered. We keep on analyzing others. It's very easy to analyze others and to give a long lecture to others. Hey, look, you are very angry. I think you should do like this. You do like this. You do like this. It is very easy. But now, from now on, you start lecturing yourself. And you start smiling at yourself. Hey, look how stupid I am. Look how my anger is, how I'm reacting. You smile, start smiling at yourself. This will help you. And whenever, as a meditator now, if you get frustrated, anger, whatever, if you get angry, don't take your tennis racket and go play tennis. Now that you get angry and you put on your loud music and you start dancing and say, I'm shedding my anger and frustrations. Not like this. As a meditator, these are escapism. You're running away from it. The more you run away, it seems to have gone away, but the deep impression is still there. And it doesn't go away. One day or the other, sooner or later, you have to face it. You can't run away. Why not face it now? Don't postpone anything which is good. Never. Facing the reality, usually, is the most difficult thing. And to accept the reality, the truth that helps us to change, we don't want to accept it. And that is what you have to keep on reminding yourself. Truth has to be faced, not run away. It is very easy to escape. But when you come back, after all, this mind is your mind. It is still there. You can't change the mind by music, you can't change the mind by this one, or you can only change the mind by inner reflection, by internalizing. So this is how you keep on reflecting yourself. I wish all of you a wonderful time, a wonderful life. Before we conclude, I would like to quickly go through some of the bunch of questions. But I think I've answered some of them, so we won't take much of time. How can you please talk about moral aspect of activity? That I've talked about it, Buddhist point of view about morality, how you can develop this wonderful moral qualities, the five shilas that I talked about. And what do you mean by look for the most... Well, when I said subtle feelings, as you start to progress in meditation, gross sensations are there, of course. But as you start to progress, you start looking where there are most subtle feelings. When you go into more subtle feelings, you start to go deeper and deeper. Don't always stay with the gross sensations. Of course, initially we shed all the gross sensations, feelings are there, but slowly and slowly, if you keep on observing the subtle feelings, let's say you are having a feeling here, which is not so gross, but then stay with that, try to understand the nature of its change, then you're going deeper. This is how you can practice. And then somebody says, I understand right so samadhi, I understand right effort, but what do you mean by right mindfulness, right concentration? Well, samadhi means, samadhi goes with three things at the same time. You can't develop samadhi, the concentration of the mind. You have to have right effort. And if you want to have real samadhi, you'll have to constantly develop mindfulness all the time. And that's why I talked about mindfulness, being aware. The more you are mindful, the quicker you can develop samadhi. Remember this. And the other thing is, if you can please explain the importance of sitting in cross legs and the importance of not moving. Cross legs, in the Indian tradition, of course, usually we sit in cross legs. Indians always sit down. So maybe that's the tradition that the Buddha took up, sit down. But European or your country is maybe not sitting down, maybe. And try sitting down, because it is comfortable in a way. If you adapt to sitting down, you can sit down. It's very easy, not difficult. But the thing is, if you find it very difficult, since your culture does not have this sitting system, then it's not a compulsion. If you find it really hard to sit, take a chair. But the most important thing is you keep your upper part of the body straight. When you meditate, you don't sit like this. You sit like this, like a lion. My teacher is 86, and I've never ever seen in his life that he sits like this. And when he sits in meditation, sometimes I am so weak, I feel in front of him. He's like a lion. And he sits like this, and like this, smiling all the time. So remember, sitting is important as long as you keep your back straight. Otherwise, if you have problems, real problems, then you can take a chair or whatever it is, but try sitting as you feel comfortable. Slowly you get used to this. Does eating or purchasing meat products break the first precept of morality? That's a very important question. Look, this has been a big issue all over the world now, since Buddhism speak about compassion, not killing and all this. If, of course, at our individual level, we don't kill or by ourselves, we don't perform this action by ourselves, oh, I need chicken, so you burn this chicken and kill and you eat it, don't do this action. Of course, if you have the choice, I would say, be a vegetarian, if you have the choice. If you have no choice, like in our place, in winter, no vegetable whatsoever, and our tradition is a nomad tradition, oh, we deal with animals, we eat animals, we have to eat, no other choice, then of course that's a different story. You can't say, I won't eat, I will starve to death. That's another extreme. But the best thing is, even when you buy meat, of course we are indirectly contributing to this unwholesome activities, because somebody has to kill for us. So if you have the choice, don't eat meat. And anyway, during a retreat, why vegetarian? Understand this. As and when you eat meat, remember, animals also generate so much of energies. Anger is there, frustration is there, even in animals, they are generating. And you eat that meat, that energy gets to your body. And that is why you get many interesting reactions. Because that energy gets into your body. That is why during a retreat we say, don't eat meat. Because every time you eat meat, then you are getting another strong energy. Maybe that animal is constantly developing so much of hate, anger, frustration, whatever it is, sick or whatever it is. So this all energy comes to your body. So why not just avoid it? If you want to be in the best self-aside. And the other thing is, in my life I got used to suppressing anger and frustration. How will I come now? Observe it objectively. Look at it. Never suppress anger and frustrations. Suppression is not the answer. Smiling is the answer. I answered it already, so I won't elaborate. Thanks for being such... Okay. Not a question. Compliment. The story you told about the woman who lost all her family, are people supposed to be non-attached to their children? If we are now aware to what comes in the mind, can we rely... You see, the story that I told you was just to illustrate how life can be full of ups and downs. And because when you don't know how to balance your mind, observe your mind, then look at what happened. No, she lost her senses. She became mad. And of course, when she became in the presence of the Buddha, who was so full of equanimity, so full of love, so full of compassion, then automatically you come down and she came to senses. And she, not that she was, she suffered so much because there was so much of attachment. Of course, we have to have attachment. I mean, you have children, you have wife, husband and wife. There has to be some sort of attachment and these things. This is how we start. But every now and then you tell yourself, hey, look, I'm developing attachment. But if you start detaching, developing non-attachment, then true love starts developing between relationship. People might think that if there's no attachment, how can we love each other? Oh, no. If you start releasing this attachment, real love starts to develop, real compassion starts to develop. Understand this. If you don't believe me, practice it. How can you stop wanting other people to change and accept them the way they are? Isn't it better for them if they enlighten them? If you enlighten them. How can you deal with feeling helpless when people hurt your loved ones and you can't? Well, you see, one fact is very clear, you cannot change others. You can't change others. If you have an illusion to change others, forget about it. You can only help others or give some tools to others so that they might change. But you cannot change others. Don't try to change your wife. Don't try to change your husband. I told you, husband and wife or boyfriend, girlfriend, you embrace with all these anger, frustration, love, lust, everything together. That is how. But you change yourself, everything changes. Change with a smile, of course. What about wearing leather? Isn't that... Well, as I said, everything that causes harm or hurt any living beings, if your intention is not there, of course, most of the time we have very good intentions, but I would always be on that side. Don't support anything that harms or hurt any other living beings whatsoever. Kids are born to test our patience, not flies. You're right. I have a son, so I know how much patience he tests my patience. And that's why I call him my Buddha. This is very long, complicated. While we are meditating, are we supposed to get in touch with the emotions we are feeling? When I'm in meditation, I have different emotions than regular. Well, you see, when you're meditating, you're opening up your heart, you're opening up your mind of all the emotions to come up. Of course, there are external, the surface level emotions are there, but then there are deep emotions that comes up. Many different things start coming up in meditation. Many things that you don't expect. Many things that you don't, never expected things start coming up. And many a times you start thinking, am I this? I'm not this person. Don't be surprised. These things start coming up. Your duty is just observe. And smilingly, then everything is okay. Can you explain more about the mind as being the sixth sense? Well, it's not the sixth sense, it is one of the six senses. And it also comes into contact with its object. And the object is either past memories or of the future planning. It is not the sixth sense, it is one of the six senses. What if telling the truth will cause more harm than to lie? Don't compromise. Truth is truth. And that is, I won't elaborate, but you have to think for yourself, you decide for yourself. I would never, ever compromise for the truth. So you think. What about professionals, professions that are indirectly involved in killing? Of course, I've answered this question. Any profession, any livelihood that you do, directly or indirectly harms others, you don't do it. You go to this factory where they kill, it's a fish factory or whatever it is, you bring all the fish and kill them. Don't join this factory. You're harming. You are supporting this harming, so why you want to be a part of that? But don't go into much more extremes, but you have to find your own middle way also in a social society's structure. If there is no falling in love, and it's all a matter of lust, why do we bother looking for the right person at all? Why don't we go ahead and marry the first random person we meet and accept him or her as he or she is like Vivek? Well, this is, by the way, last question, not a coincidence. I was just thinking that Israeli people, for me, seems to be very romantic people. I get a lot of questions about relationship. I was telling our friends yesterday, our Dhamma friends, I said, I'm married. Well, if I'm not married, I would have fallen in love with somebody. I would have gone back as two persons, not one. Anyway, you see, there is falling in love in the conventional sense, conventional reality that we fall in love, of course. But as I told you, this falling in love must turn into raising in love. Keep that in mind. Support each other spiritually. You must grow together spiritually. One of you is going in a very different way and having a hard time. One of you start saying, hey, look, you observe, you see, start. You go and take your time, sit down for a while, just observe whatever is there in the mind. Look, this is how you start helping each other to grow in spirituality. Buddha says, coming together is not about physical, sexual, emotional coming together. Oh no, two partners coming together means what? There are two spiritual partners growing together in spirituality, growing together in, towards liberation, towards all this understanding. And to be in a relationship and to develop these wonderful qualities to help each other, to support each other, I tell you, it's one of the greatest teachers. And you all know that. I'm sure there are hardly any people here who has no girlfriend or boyfriend or husband or wife. There must be some relationship going on. And you know how easy and difficult it is. First time when you fall in love, it seems everything is wonderful. But suddenly that love, falling in love, because it is falling, it comes with so much of fear. Will she go with some other man? Or will this man go with somebody? And what if he speaks to that girl or speaks to that man? So much jealousy, anger is there. And then this fear, what if something happens to her? The boyfriend is waiting for her girlfriend. She didn't come back home. What happened? Accident? What happened? And all these start coming. So the fear, worries, tension start coming up in the mind. This is part and parcel of falling in love. Now you start raising in love, you start smiling. Oh, we're together, we enjoy life now together. Who knows? This will change. As long as you are together smiling, try to remain with the smile, understanding fully well that this might change. And this will change sooner or later. Why not? You might as well enjoy it. With this understanding, with this awareness, that this will also change. Alright, now with this, I conclude my talk. But before we conclude, shall we all sit down for a few moments? Whatever you have heard or learned during the 7 days, it was all given with the best intention. There was only love and compassion with which all the teachings or all the experiences were shared with all of you. But sometimes even good intentions hurts and harms others. And if during these 7 days, directly or indirectly, if I've hurt or harmed any one of you, either through my speech, through my actions, physical actions, or even through my mind, I seek forgiveness from all of you. I'm very sorry if I've hurt or harmed any one of you in any way. I came here with the pure intention and goodwill to help come out of the difficulties. But if I've harmed or hurt any one of you, I'm very sorry. I seek pardon from all of you. I seek pardon. So now we will have the talk from Tirvana. If you like, you can take 5 minutes break, and after 5 minutes break, we can all come back for the talk.
I'll do it.